If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Hey everyone, Seth Meyers here. Welcome to another episode of Late Night Lit, our podcast celebrating books and authors. As we head into the fall, everyone will be spending more time at home, and if you're anything like me, that means more time reading good books. To discuss what's happening in the world of books, I'm going to turn things over to Sarah Jenks Daly, a supervising producer at Late Night, whose literature expertise is invaluable for myself and for our show. Take it away, Sarah.
Welcome to Late Night Lit. I'm Sarah Jenks Daly, supervising producer at Late Night. This month, we're featuring conversations with two fantastic actors who have both recently come out with beautiful and inspiring children's picture books. Our first chat is with Kirby Howell Baptiste, author of two stories, Little Black Boy, Oh, the Things You Will Do, and Little Black Girl, Oh, the Things You Can Do. Then we're joined by Diane Kruger, author of A Name from the Sky. Plus, in celebration of November being National Family Literacy Month, we have book recommendations from late night staffers and their very own young readers. Our first conversation this month is with Kirby Howell Baptiste, a very funny and talented actress you know from shows such as Barry, The Good Place, and most recently, the Netflix series The Sandman, and who also has been a writer for most of her life. Kirby speaks to us about her inspiration and desire to author not only one book, but two, the stories that were meaningful to her as a young woman, and the challenges of writing in rhyme. Here's my conversation with Kirby Howell Baptiste. I'm very excited to talk to Kirby Howell Baptiste, a very talented actress who has not only been a part of three of my all-time favorite television shows, Veronica Mars, Killing Eve, and The Good Place, but she's also a children's book author. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to Late Night Lit, Kirby.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So instead of writing one children's book, you actually wrote two.
Yes.
And I want to ask you about both specifically, but can you start with just where this all began for you?
Yeah, so I actually wrote Little Black Girl, Oh, the Things You Can Do, years and years ago. I wrote it a long time ago, and at the time I showed it to my then agent, who was like, yeah, I don't really think there's an appetite for it. It was sort of, I kind of got a bit of a stay in your lane type answer. And so at the time, it kind of got put on the back burner. And I think like a lot of people who write, you have tons and tons of folders on your laptop of things that you've written. And then obviously in 2020, we shut down. The world sort of like came to a grinding halt. And I had just the time to go through everything. And I went back and just looked at loads of stuff. I was mostly doing a cleanup, but also it was sort of nice to, the thing that kind of kept me sane was writing. So I went back and looked at all the sketches I'd written for UCB and pilots that I had ideas for that I'd started and hadn't gone anywhere. And then I went into my folder of books and I reread this one. And it's rare, I think, as a writer to come back to something years later and go, whoa, I really, really like this. This still feels like it's good. Most of the time you just sort of hate the work you've done. So I went back to it and I was really excited and I sent it to my UK agent, Sarah Stevenson at the B-side, and she was taken with it immediately. She said it was great and she said, let's get this started. And she got the wheels turning and she got meetings set up with the lit department over there, which then happened to work out with my lit department in the US. And then the wheels got turning and I guess the rest is kind of history, modern history.
So you have two books here, Little Black Girl and Little Black Boy. And both books begin with the same wonderful line, which is, did anyone mention the world's open to you?
Yeah.
After completing Little Black Girl, when did you decide you also wanted to write one for boys with a boy protagonist?
With a boy protagonist. So when I went to the book, we took a bunch of meetings and the editor that I really vibed with the most was Stacey Varney at Penguin Random House. And when I met with her, she had said, oh, you know, we really love the book, but is there a way there could be two? Like, we kind of see it as there could be more than one of this. And then it just became sort of a natural expansion to do sort of a male protagonist. So they became almost like brother and sister books. Mm-hmm. And so when I got the chance to do that, it was sort of like, yeah, I mean, I jumped at it. It wasn't the original plan, but it was also nice to have the time and the space between the two books.
Right. I know you co-wrote Little Black Boy with Larry Fields.
Yeah.
So what was that writing process like in terms of collaboration? Because writing is such a solitary pursuit for so many of us. Like you said, you know, you do things and then you're like, I hate this. I'm putting it away in a folder. What was it like doing something with someone else?
Well, I think the good way outweighs the bad if you can find the right collaborator. I don't think it's ever an easy process because you're trying to find someone who at least you're coming, you have to start at the same place. None of us think the same. Literally, there's billions of us here and no two people think the exact same way. So collaborating is always going to be difficult. But it's just finding someone, I think like any relationship, where you at least have the same common ground. For me, it also came out of, you know, when I wrote Little Black Girl, it was such a love letter to young black girls, to both my nieces and also, you know, myself when I was a kid. And so it felt like it was only right to have a male perspective and have someone who could speak to that side as well and say, these are the things I wish I heard as a young black man. And so bringing Larry on felt very natural. And I think, again, we had that common ground of going, we both know who we want to target and we both know that this book is important to certain people and certain communities. But actually what's interesting is with Little Black Boy, I can often see the collaboration because there's moments of it where I go, oh, I think it's better for the collaboration. And I almost wish I had some of that with the girl. The girl was so much just of me. And I think that, again, like I said, if you can find the right collaborator, I think it makes the work better because you just have a sounding board. You have someone to ask questions. You have someone you trust. You have someone to argue with. You have just someone to sort of, you're not just constantly rattling the ideas around in your own head.
Yeah. Well, both of the books are inspiring and also very direct in a way that I thought was very powerful. For those who haven't read it, they're both about encouraging young black children to pursue careers that perhaps are not exactly the ones that they thought they had been directed towards or pushed towards.
Yeah.
And were those messages like pointing out things young readers might hear in their childhood that might discourage or dissuade them, things that you yourself heard?
Yeah, I think in particular, so that they have two different titles, they're very, very slightly different. So there's Little Black Girl are the things you can do and Little Black Boy are the things you will do. And that was an important distinction because I think for young black girls, and actually I would extend that to young women in general, what we struggle with is the idea that we can, like with permission, and that we can do certain things. We're told that we can't do this and we can't do that and that's not ladylike and you don't do that. And we struggle with that. And I think for young black boys, one of the biggest struggles is the expectation that they will do anything. The bar is set so low and the expectation is so low for young black boys and that is put upon them. And so I think for me, it was such an important distinction because it was, like you say, the books are direct. And I wanted to be direct in saying, these are the things you will do, no matter what anyone tells you. These are the avenues that are open to you. And I think in particular, when it comes to masculinity and black masculinity, the world can be, not within black culture, but I think outside of it, the world can be so limiting and so these stereotypes are put upon you. And I think it's so important to speak directly to young kids before they almost get the sort of like, that sort of like fog-like brainwashing that we all experience. I think it's important to get these messages in as young as possible.
Yes. I read in past interviews that you've said, although these are kids' books, that you see them as being able to reach a much larger audience than maybe just the younger age group that people would assume they're for.
Yeah, I would really love these books to be graduation gifts for people who, you know, if they're, you know, 50 years old and have decided on a career change and knowing that, because I think words of inspiration and being told that you can or will do anything, it's not something that is exclusively necessary just for kids. It's not something that only kids need to hear. I think at all stages we have these moments of self-doubt. And I think it's so important to have something. I mean, it's such a quick and simple read as well for an adult that I love the idea of it being sort of like an inspirational gift.
Yeah, I love that. We talked about collaboration a little bit, and the illustrations in both are beautiful, incredible, yeah. Beautiful. What was the collaborative process like with Paul Davey? Is that
Paul Davey? Yeah. Yeah, he's incredible. So it was both of our first time doing this. Paul has never illustrated for a kid's book. I think this is probably one of the most commercial projects that he's done. I'd never written a kid's book. So we were really going in kind of, this was so new to both of us, but I come from UCB and improv and all that. So I come from a world of collaboration. So to me, it's really normal and really natural. And actually, I think what I've been fortunate about is from coming from that world of comedy, I actually recognize that you do get a better product when you collaborate. I think most of the time, I think that often ego tells you that's not the case, but I think it's proven that a lot of the time, like, you know, I think minds coming together that think in a similar way will get a better result. So with Paul, the first one, you know, it was a little, we were feeling each other out. And by the second book, we emailed back and forth and I would send him ideas and thoughts. And actually Larry thought of the whole marine biology theme because he has an aunt who's a marine biologist. And he loved that. He loved sciences and he was never really pushed in that direction. So for him, it was like, this is what I would love to say and I would love to do. And had I been sort of like guided in this way, I might be pursuing this thing that I think for most young black boys, particularly where he grew up, it was so locked off to them. So we had a really, like the three of us collaborated so much on the second book and on the first, him and I, we sort of figured it out. And this idea of the kind of, you know, theme of STEM running through it was something that I think Stacey had sort of pitched, Paul ran with and I pitched on and, yeah.
Well, the illustrations are incredible. I really loved them.
Yeah, he's done an amazing job.
You talked a little bit about this and your background, but I wanted to know, have you always been someone who's been a writer? Like, do you remember the first time it was something that you decided you loved or something you could do to either escape reality or do as a hobby or whatever it meant to you as a kid?
Yeah, well, do you know what? Again, during the pandemic, we all had a lot of time. And I was actually, I should make note of this. Not only did I just have the time that a lot of people had, I was in lockdown in London in my mum's house. So it was like back to being a kid. So you don't have a lot to do. Yeah. So I had a lot of my childhood stuff around me. And actually, I found a comic book that I had written when I was a kid and I'd done my own illustrations for it and things like that. So I realized, because I think in my mind, I thought I started writing when I was older, particularly when I started doing comedy. But then I went home and I saw that comic book. I found just like a regular school pad, but just like a sketch I'd written out, just fully wrote out like it was an essay. And that was like a scene between two people. And I realized I've written for a very long time. And I think it is, like you say, Sarah, I think it has been like a way of escaping. And it's pure imagination as well. It's just like all the things in your head. Would I have been an amazing illustrator? I would have illustrated my own books, but I absolutely cannot get the ideas out of my head and on paper in a drawing the way I want it to be. But I think writing is the way I do that. It's the way I can get an idea that is in my head and find a way to sort of explain it in a way that other people understand. So we're like, yeah, you see what I'm seeing. And I think that is what it's always been for me. It's sort of a form of communication. It's, for me, it's one of the purest forms of communication because there isn't the immediate feedback. I can go, it's almost like a therapy session. I can go, these are the thoughts and feelings that I have, and these are the things that are running through my brain, and then you can absorb it and take it in, and then we can have a conversation about it. And I find it is just my way of processing a lot of things. Like recently, with all the things that have been happening here with Roe v. Wade and the repeal of that, I have found that you can rant and rage on the internet and maybe feel better or maybe not. But for me, I think often not. Most of the time not. But what has helped me is like I wrote this short about it. Like I wrote these ideas because that is the way for me to sort of like purge myself of all these thoughts and feelings and opinions in a way that is, I think most productive, but also most cathartic.
Yeah. Were there books that you read as a young woman that you remember resonating with you deeply as a woman, as a Black woman, or just like as a human on earth that still sort of stay with you?
Yeah. Well, as a kid's book, there was one that I read, which is called Nancy No Size. And I loved it. It was one of the only books that I ever had that had, it was not only a Black protagonist, the whole family was Black. And it was about this girl called Nancy. And she basically didn't feel like she ever fit in. She wasn't as tall as her sister. She wasn't as short as, like, it was always, you know, Nancy was no size at all. She was no this at all. And then in the end, you know, obviously Nancy realizes that she's perfect. She's just, you know, she's perfect the way she is. And that, I think that character really resonated with me, being Nancy No Size. And I think it resonates with a lot of people feeling kind of like out of place and neither here nor there and bobbing between worlds. So there was that. And then the other one was I read books by Mallory Blackman, who's a wonderful writer, and she wrote Noughts and Crosses and Hacker. And those books I absolutely loved when I was a kid because they were such like, I was a little older reading those because they're all thrillers and things like that. But I'd never, someone so sort of like seamlessly and without it being about race, just found a way in a lot of her writing to just include Black people in genres that they're not normally included in. And also a lot of these books I read, if you think about it, was sort of like pre-instant internet, you know, growing up. So you didn't even know who the authors were. Like Mallory Blackman, I didn't know she was a Black woman who wrote these books. And then Nancy No Size was written by a lady called Mary Hoffman, and that was a white woman, and I didn't know that either. And so, like, for me, it was so much about just being represented on the page and seeing or reading characters, reading people that were like myself in literature, and that was new and exciting and fresh. And also, I think probably was the reason I was so engaged in writing and wanted to write.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I do want to ask you for a book recommendation, but before that, I just thought of one thing I wanted to ask about while you're talking about writing.
Yes.
One unique aspect of these books is that they are written in rhyme, and I loved it so much. It's not just a few words per page, but rather everything rhymes throughout.
Yeah.
So how difficult was it for you to find not only the thought you wanted to convey to the reader, but also to be able to convey that in a rhyme?
Rhyme, yeah. Okay, so this is the first time I've ever written anything that rhymes. So it was like, so English was my favorite subject at school, and I love poetry. And I think, you know, poetry is like hit or miss, right? It's either excellent and it makes you feel everything, or it's so cringy. But it is, I think, a really powerful medium to find something that rhymes because it's digestible. And it's also like a song in the same way that you just find yourself like singing lyrics. You take something in a way that you wouldn't normally if it was just text. So it was definitely difficult. There were moments where it would just come so easily. It would be so natural. And then there would be others where we were just agonizing over like getting a thesaurus and going through every single word. Like, what rhymes with this word? And that there were one of two of those. And those will really like, those will make your day bad.
The collector director one was impressive to me. I was like, I would not have gotten there.
Yeah. And sometimes you really do, you have to go like, what am I trying to say? And is there a world of thing that I can, like, can I say it differently? You know, but it was exciting. And I think I enjoy writing things in that way. And I think it's also that kind of like, for me, that's part of it's spanning ages, almost in that sort of like, oh, the places you'll go type thing, you know, like having something that rhymes, that feels light, that feels energetic. I think that is what makes it span a bunch of different age groups and demographics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your point, it stays with you in a way that it might not otherwise, which is really excellent.
Yeah.
Well, the books are so wonderful. I love them. I can't wait to give them to my niece and nephew.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Before I let you go, would you mind if you have a book recommendation? We love to share our guests' book recommendations to wrap up a conversation.
Yeah, I have a book that I read. Actually, it's been a little while now since I read it, but it's called Queenie by Candice Carty-Williams.
Yes, I read that.
Yeah, she's excellent. She's a young Black writer. And I actually got a chance to meet her when I was in London. And she just writes in a way that I think is really cool and relatable, and particularly being from London and her and I sharing a Caribbean background. I love the specificity that she has in her home life and her upbringing and the food they eat and the places they go. And it feels for me, when I read it, very not only nostalgic, but I also get kind of homesick reading it, because it's really specific and really, you know, new and fresh.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book. I loved that one too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Kirby, and for all the art that you are continuing to bring into the world. It was so nice to speak to you.
Thanks, Sarah. This is lovely.
After the break, we're joined by actress and author Diane Kruger.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our second conversation is with Diane Kruger, an award-winning actress you know from films such as Inglourious Basterds, Troy, National Treasure, and many more. Her new children's book is a story about her upbringing in Germany and her personal journey to both understanding and celebrating the origins of her own name. She talks to us about her love of literature and stories from a young age, the power behind a name, and how having her own daughter helped inspire her to write this book. Here's my conversation with Diane Kruger. I'm thrilled to be joined by a wonderful actress you know from many film roles, my favorite being Bridget von Hammersmark in Inglourious Basterds. But she is here to talk about her newest project, which is a children's book that was published at the end of October. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to Late Night Lit, Diane Kruger.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So this is your first foray into children's literature and a children's book, and it's a really beautiful story which shares your own experience as well as hopes for your daughter, Nova. I thought we could start with the title, which is A Name from the Sky, and if you could tell a little bit of the story, but it's essentially where your mom got the inspiration for your name.
Yes. In fact, the title is kind of, it all came together. It's a little magical because it is from the meaning of my name. I was named after Diana, the goddess of hunt, right, who was on a horse that she would fly through the forests and protect animals. And then my daughter's name is Nova, which is a star, right? And so from the sky. But also Nova's dad and I met on a movie called Sky.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
So it's all coming together.
So you talk about in the book growing up in Germany and where you grew up. If you could explain a little bit about your name, and it was not as common as maybe some of the other kids that you were going to school with.
Yeah, so when I was growing up, I grew up in a very rural, small village in Germany, maybe 2,000 people. And so my mom named me Diane with an E at the end, which in German is very unusual. That might have been every once in a while a Diana, but Diane was very unusual. So people, I mean, the kids in my class made fun of me a lot. And also, I've always felt different. You know, I had a pet bunny named Benny, mm-hmm. who I would take to school every day on a leash. So the kids, you know, thought I was a little odd, and I kind of kept to myself, and I loved reading and I loved books, and I would act out all these different storylines in the books. But as you can imagine, I suffered a little bit from that as I grew older. And when the pandemic hit, I was isolating with my mother, and I had my own daughter at that point who was 18 months old. And we were talking about, you know, all those old stories, all the stuff that I had forgotten growing up in Germany. You know, we finally had time again to talk about all these wonderful stories. And it gave me the idea of writing a book, because when my mother explained to me after I came home a little sad, you know, from school because people were making fun of me, and she explained to me the meaning of my name, it kind of literally changed my life and my world. And it gave me confidence that one day I shall find the power that my name held and that she had always envisioned for myself. And so now as an adult, you know, I look back and I think, you know, so many kids have that same experience. They don't feel like they fit in. Even if you're named John, they hate their names at one point. You know, everybody's sort of looking for what their powers will be growing up and where you're going to land. And then becoming a parent myself, all the things that I thought about how I was going to name my daughter, you know, all the hopes that we as parents have for our children plays into that. And so that's how this book kind of started happening.
You mentioned your pet bunny, Benny, and you write about him in the book. But I love how in the book, it's evident how important literature is to the main character and was to you at an early age. And you write about reading with your pet bunny, Benny, and how reading books allowed you to escape into other worlds. Do you remember what some of your favorite stories were when you were growing up?
I love Pippi Longstocking. You know, she really was and is in Germany, especially, you know, sort of a pillar of children's literature. I loved, there was a book called The Little Witch. I don't know if you have that in the United States. It was about a little, you know, child witch who couldn't ever remember her spells and she would, you know, mess up, but she wanted to become a good witch. And so, you know, she had all these adventures. Those were the kinds of stuff that I loved.
Are any of those books ones that you've shared with Nova?
I'm trying. She's still very young. She's not quite four. So Pippi Longstocking, we have started. But, you know, she's in that phase where she's like, why does she have two different pairs of socks on? You know, she doesn't quite get it yet. But trust me, it's in her library.
So she has a little library.
Oh, huge. Yeah, yeah. Wherever we are. I love books. Like, truly, it's my favorite time with her. Now I take her to bookstores and we can spend an entire afternoon just looking at books. It's so interesting to me to see what illustrations, you know, she gravitates to. What I love, it's just like we usually leave with like four or five books, and sometimes we start our nighttime routine way early because she wants to read all these books.
That's fantastic. You mentioned the illustrations and I love them. They're really beautiful, especially the one of my favorite character, Bridget. What sort of input did you have in the way that the book ultimately looked?
You know, quite a bit. All this is very new to me. You know, I had no idea how long and how much attention to detail goes into making children's books. So my editor introduced me to, you know, first they asked me, like, how do you see yourself? How do you imagine the book to look? And, you know, I said I was a little nostalgic. I wanted it to look quite classic. I gravitate towards books that really look like drawings. You know, I don't love those books that already look like animated characters. You know, I like the classic look. And I said, you know, look, I'm German. Like, maybe we can find a German illustrator just to sort of tie in my roots into the book. And so that's what happened. And then Krista Unsner, who illustrated my book, we went back and forth. We probably had weekly Zooms, you know, during the pandemic to make sure that, like, what I'm wearing, you know, what should be illustrated, what words we could take out, you know, because that's a whole other level of writing a children's book. I didn't know how, you know, how many words you could use, and illustrations explain so much.
You also write in the book about the first time your mother took you to the theater and how that set you on a path for what you ultimately wanted to do. You mentioned Nova is still young, but are you looking forward to taking her to the theater and letting her experience that or bringing her on set?
Yeah, I have many times. You know, I think Nova's very outgoing, but she doesn't like to go on stage. Like, she does ballet and kung fu, but whenever they have like the end of the year performances, she doesn't want to go up on stage. So we don't make her, obviously. But she loved the theater. I just took her to see the Elsa musical in Germany, actually. And she was like in the aisle dancing. And it's just such a joy for me because I get to do that with her. Where I grew up, that was like the unusual thing to do. And we're lucky enough to live in places that is so much more accessible, right? So I love taking her to that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so wonderful. It's one of the best things about living in New York, I think, is the accessibility to wonderful theater.
For sure.
Last time you were on Late Night, which was a few years ago now, you spoke with Seth about football, or soccer as we refer to it here, because you're such a devoted fan. I just wanted to ask, the World Cup is starting in about a month. I'm assuming you're excited.
I am excited. And I feel like I get the best of both worlds, right? Because I'm German, but I consider myself half French. So whoever does better, it's like a win-win situation for me.
Well, I think France and Germany start in different groups, so I feel like you'll be safe, at least for the early rounds.
That's good. Yeah.
The book is beautifully done with such a universal message, and I'm so grateful that you had a little bit of time to talk to us about it today. Finally, we like to end with book recommendations from our guests that they've recently enjoyed. So if you have one, we'd love to hear it.
Yes. Please forgive me because I can't think of the authors, but one is called Frank and Bert. You know, as I said, my daughter's not quite four, so she loves that. And then a book called Nowhere. It's about a little boy who runs away because he wants to get away from his family, and he finds himself nowhere. And then he realizes that he actually does like the questions and likes to get tucked in. So those are the two on rotation right now.
Well, those sound great. Thank you so much for joining us, Diane. It was so lovely to chat with you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
November is National Family Literacy Month. And in the spirit of that, we asked two late night staffers, Dietrich Lohmann and Sarah Egan Wilson, both of whom are parents of young readers, to share their kids' current literary favorites.
Hello, my name is Dietrich Lohmann, and I am the senior coordinator for Late Night with Seth Meyers. And I'm sitting here today with my son,
Dietrich Campbell Lohmann.
And he's going to tell us about one of his favorite books and why he highly recommends it for other kids to read. And the name of that book would be
I Am a Frog.
And what do you like about that book?
It's that it can show kids what you want to be and not what other people want you to be in your imagination. And you can imagine it everything you want to be and not everything that other people want you to be.
Okay, that sounds really great. Would you recommend any other books for any other kids?
I would say The Couch Potato.
The Couch Potato, okay. Anything else?
No.
No? Okay. Well, cool. All right. So we recommend in I Am a Frog, and that book is by
Mo Williams.
Okay, that book is by Mo Williams, an Elephant and Piggy book. Cool. Check out that book. I think think it's a great read, recommended by my son, Dietrich. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Sarah Egan Wilson, and I am the makeup artist for Late Night with Seth Meyers, and I'm here with... What's your name?
Seamus.
Seamus Wilson? And how old are you, Seamus?
5.
Okay, and what is your favorite book?
The Cool Bean.
The Cool Bean, and who are the authors? Jory John and Pete Oswald. And what is The Cool Bean about? Why do you like it so much?
Because he has friends that are cool.
That are cool, and why are they cool?
Because they're really nice.
They're nice. What do they do for him?
They help him.
Yeah? What is so important? What's the most important thing? What's the lesson you learned from the book?
Being nice.
Being nice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you do that at school?
Yeah.
Yeah? You help people?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. All right. So you recommend this book to other kids?
Yeah.
You have anything else to say?
No.
No? Are you a cool bean?
Yeah.
Cool.
This has been Late Night Lit. My thanks to Seth Meyers, Mike Shoemaker, Kirby Howell Baptiste, Diane Kruger, Matt Ryman, Jay Johnson, Ross Leupold, and Rafael Ahuelos. Our theme music was written and performed by the 8G Band. For Late Night with Seth Meyers, I'm Sarah Jenks Daly. Thanks for listening and happy reading.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now!
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.